Welcome to another episode of Boom Lawyered, a Rewire radio podcast hosted by the legal journalism team, which 3 out of 4 dentists agree is healthy for your gums. And that fourth dentist is a Republican, so who cares what he thinks anyway? I'm Imani Gandhi.
And I'm Jess Piclo. Rewire.news is dedicated to bringing you listeners the best reproductive rights and social justice news, commentary, and analysis on the web. And the Teen Legal Podcast is part of that mission. If you haven't already, we hope you subscribe. And if you have, thank you. One more ask, please leave us reviews so we know how we're doing and we can read them on air.
But not just any reviews. We're going to need 5-star reviews. We read 5-star reviews on the air. So if you read us a 1-star review and, you know, tell us that we look like a big toe, we're not going to read that on air.
And I won't brush my hair no matter how many times you tell me. Okay, seriously. This episode, we're talking about birth control, privacy, and the conservatives' fever dreams of taking it all away from you and anyone they can. Seriously, these are the people who thought Obama and liberals were coming for their guns while they are actively and actually trying to get rid of anything but natural family planning. For those of you who may not know what that is, it is basically hope your fertility math is good, check your mucus, cross your fingers, and go for it. Or not, which is what conservatives want. No sex unless they say it's okay.
Yeah, but Jessica, guns are a constitutional right. Haven't you ever heard of the Second Amendment?
Well, yeah, but what about the substantive due process right to privacy?
Substantive due process? Whoo, boy, that's a topic. We're going to get to that later in the show. Hey, Jess, remember back in the halcyon days when we first met? It was about 2011, 2012, when we started podcasting about birth control benefit lawsuits. Do you remember those days?
Oh, boy, do I ever.
Oh, boy, those were good days.
They sure were.
But, you know, here we are again, and it's 5 years later, and we're still talking about it. But before we even get to the birth control lawsuits, we should talk about why you have a legal right to birth control in the first place.
Good idea.
It is a good idea. I'm full of good ideas, Jessica.
This is why I keep you around.
Oh, thank you. I'm sure everyone listening to this knows that birth control was criminalized until the court in 1965 found a fundamental right to marital privacy in the Constitution. That case was Griswold v. Connecticut. And that right allows you to pop birth control pills like Pez if you want to. The state can't criminalize the use of birth control. And then in 1973, in Roe v. Wade, that fundamental right to privacy was extended to include abortion, up to a point. And that's when all hell really broke loose. But what is substantive due process? Well, strap in, this is going to get a bit nerdy. Okay, so Section 1 of the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, which is pretty much the only section anyone cares about, contains two clauses. The Equal Protection Clause, which basically says don't be racist and shit, and the Due Process Clause, which says that a state can't deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law.
By the way, the Fifth Amendment has a similar clause that applies to the federal government, and it's important, and we'll explain why too, but please, keep going, Imani.
The Fifth Amendment sure does contain a due process clause. So all in all, neither the state nor federal government can deprive you of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Now, over the past century, the Supreme Court has interpreted the 14th Amendment so that it doesn't just guarantee procedural due process, but also substantive due process.
But what's the difference between procedural due process and substantive due process?
See, now we're getting to the heart of it. Procedural due process requires the government to follow proper procedure when it takes away life, liberty, or property. The right to a jury trial of your peers, the right to confront your accuser, the right to an attorney, and that sort of thing. Procedural due process guarantees that legal proceedings be carried out fairly. Now, substantive due process protects certain fundamental rights from excessive regulation by the state, even if those rights are unenumerated in the Constitution.
Okay, I want to walk through this. So substantive due process rights are fundamental rights that aren't explicitly written into the Constitution, but are nonetheless protected by it. So that means they give meaning to them constitutionally, like privacy. What does privacy look like? Well, substantive due process is one of the areas of the law to go and figure that out.
Exactly. Substantive due process rights tend to arise in intimate areas of people's lives. The fundamental right to privacy, out of which springs the right to abortion and the right to contraception. In fact, most substantive due process rights relate to childbirth, child rearing, marriage, and sex. And surprise, surprise, those are the areas where Republican-led legislatures want to get all up in your business by criminalizing abortion, banning same-sex marriage, banning same-sex adoption, and hell, even banning same-sex sex.
Well, after all, quote-unquote homosexual sodomy wasn't even legal until 1986 when the Supreme Court said, okay, it is, in Bowers v. Hardwick.
Precisely. And don't think for one second that the religious right wouldn't love to go back to the halcyon days when people couldn't knock boots of the same sex without worrying about the cops knocking on their door. But just to get a little bit nerdier for a second, conservative justices like Clarence Thomas and Antonin Scalia, R.I.P. Nino, and of course Gorsuch, reject substantive due process. They don't necessarily oppose the rights themselves. They just think that the rights should be protected by passing legislation that protects those rights or by passing constitutional amendments that protect those rights. They reject the idea that there are some rights that the Founding Fathers didn't contemplate. In other words, that are unenumerated, not listed in the Constitution, that nonetheless deserve full constitutional protection. And one can imagine how long it would take for a constitutional amendment to be passed that would, for example, allow same-sex couples to get married, considering the number of state legislatures that are GOP-controlled.
Basically, it would never happen, at least not in our lifetime.
Right.
Okay, now that we got our legal nerd on, let's talk about why this all matters in our current moment. Our Cheeto in Chief has declared that pretty much any employer is free to mount moral or religious objections to the birth control benefit in Obamacare, which, remember, is still the law of the land. And as a result, groups like the ACLU and the Center for Reproductive Rights, as well as states like Massachusetts and Washington, have all sued and said, hold up, you just can't declare a benefit like comprehensive and non-discriminatory healthcare null and void because you don't like the idea of people having sex, let alone having sex for fun. And yes, birth control is healthcare. But this fight is mostly about people other than straight conservative dudes having sex for fun, and that in and of itself is being bad. I can start a whole rant about this, about men abusing power and the myriad of ways in which it plays out in the workplace, but that is an entirely other show, and one which I think we should do. But for now, let's keep talking about birth control and how conservatives hate other people having sex and don't really see women and LGBTQ people as human to begin with.
I'm really getting a bit misty-eyed thinking about those early days of yelling about birth control shenanigans by conservatives. That's why we started podcasting in the first place. Hobby Lobby and Little Sisters of the Poor. Do you remember all of that?
I mean, first it was about certain kinds of secular for-profit businesses getting an accommodation from having to comply with a law. Then it was probably going to be a full exemption from having to even think about following the law thanks to the Little Sisters, which, by the way, means now I have Billy Idol earworming through my head because I cannot think of Little Sisters and White Wedding without it all happening at the same time in my head.
Hey, little sister, blah, 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 blah. I don't even know the words. How do I not know the words to that song? Anyway. Bygone.
Hey, little sisters, what have you done?
You
I mean, seriously, hey, little sisters, what have you fucking done?
Besides complain about having to provide birth control when there is no way in any world that you would have had to do that under this policy. But I digress.
And this is exactly why Imani and I started podcasting in the first place. Anyways, those lawsuits did legally and culturally set the stage for conservatives to expand the idea of what a religious imposition means and how they can avoid laws by claiming one. So, background. The Department of Justice is trying to dismiss the case that currently existed where all of those companies were having to comply with Obamacare. It's not entirely clear what the courts are going to do with those dismissals yet. Will they let the administration just off the hook? Federal courts don't like to do that. And by the way, one of those cases, which has been launched by the University of Notre Dame, actually includes students in it. And so the administration just can't quit that lawsuit all by itself. However, just like this newish podcast, we have a fresh round of lawsuits, only this time they're challenging what the Trump administration has done with its interim final rule that's designed to roll back the Obamacare benefit.
Hold up, Jess. Maybe explain what the hell an interim final rule is?
That's a good idea because we're getting into some weeds here. Christine Grimaldi at Rewire.news has a great piece detailing what an IFR means, but let me give you a quick summary. So, under administrative law, normally an agency has to set out what is called a notice and comment period, and that's governed under a federal law called the Administrative Procedures Act. Basically, what that law does is set out a timeline and process that agencies like HHS need to follow before they can issue regulations like a rollback of the birth control benefit. But hold up, there's an exception to the rule that lets them issue what is called an IFR, and that exception requires an emergency. And in this case, the bullshit the Trump administration is using as the emergency is a claim that the science is disputed as to the safety of to birth control. And I mean, my God, that is so condescending and full of junk science and makes me really mad. But anyways, here the Trump administration has declared accessing contraception through insurance a public health emergency. And since Congress can't actually get anything done, at least not as of this recording, they hadn't actually repealed Obamacare yet, this is how Trump is intending to govern, by executive fiat, written by religious conservatives that think the pill is an abortion. Oh, so, if you're still awake after that administrative law explainer, these lawsuits represent employers and students who are at risk of losing their birth control insurance coverage. Only instead of suing under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, the lawsuits argue the administration is violating the First Amendment's Establishment Clause, which is a big deal, and we'll explain why in a second. See? I told you the First Amendment was hot right now.
So hot right now.
Boom! Lawyered.
I've said it before, like literally I said it at the top of the show, and I think I also said it in the middle of the show, and I'm going to say it again. You and I have been writing about the birth control benefit, Hobby Lobby, Little Sisters of the Poor, University of Notre Dame, Wheaton College, and we've been talking about all of these lawsuits brought by colleges and religious institutions since 2012. And we've been talking about RFRA, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and quote-unquote sincerely held beliefs. But we haven't been talking about the Establishment Clause, because until last week, no one raised the Establishment Clause. I remember writing about the Establishment Clause in 2014 and scratching my head like, is it really this simple? Is the Establishment Clause really the answer to all of these questions? So let me explain how the Establishment Clause argument goes. So do you remember back in her Hobby Lobby dissent, the notorious RBG, that's Ruth Bader Ginsburg, said, quote, "Your right to swing your arm ends just where the other man's nose begins." Now that's basically what the Establishment Clause argument is, the one that the ACLU and the Center for Reproductive Rights are making in court right now. The Establishment Clause prohibits the government from creating exemptions to neutral, generally applicable laws, like the law that employers must provide birth control coverage, in a manner that imposes significant burdens on the rights of third parties. In other words, no religious exemptions if those exemptions burden students and women. And that's what Trump's rollback of birth control coverage does. It exempts religious employers from the birth control benefit and forces employees of religious employers to bear the cost of their employer's religion. And that cost can be up to $1,000 a year, which is not chump change, especially for struggling people in this country. Now, I know a lot of conservatives like to say that you can buy birth control pills at your local bodega for $9, but that's simply not true.
Oh, but if it were. So the Establishment Clause, hooray!
Hooray indeed. I'm super excited that the Center for Reproductive Rights and the ACLU are making this argument in their lawsuits. One of the reasons this argument hasn't been made before is because hardly anyone was stepping up to say, hey, excuse me, this religious exemption is a burden on me. Students at Notre Dame did. I think they intervened in that lawsuit, but that's it. There were no plaintiffs that actively sued. But now multiple students are, and it's very exciting. And these students and workers are suing in their own right. They're challenging the Trump administration's attempt to roll back the birth control benefit by arguing that the attempt favors those religions that object to reproductive autonomy and gay people and contraception and abortion, and you get the idea.
Right. So the Establishment Clause says that if the government is going to do a thing, like pass the law that has a predominant purpose and effect, of advancing a particular set of religious beliefs, in this case, evangelical Christianity, and those who think that the pill is the same as having an abortion, it's an official government endorsement of that particular religious belief or organization. Also, it fosters an excessive government entanglement with that religion.
So the claim here is that the religious exemption, IFR, that's the interim final rule, is not neutral between religion and non-religion because it promotes and favors religious organizations and particular religious beliefs. In this case, Christians who are still pissed that civil rights laws are a thing.
Precisely.
So what is so cool about these lawsuits is, number one, fuck Donald Trump. Number two, other people have religious rights too, including the right to be left the hell alone by your uncle's religious beliefs.
And three, unlike crafty owners of Hobby Lobby who would rather you bedazzle your uterus than have access to birth control pills, the ACLU and other lawsuits are not seeking an accommodation from a government regulation, right? They're not seeking to avoid a rule, which is what the other fights were over. Those guys didn't want to comply with the birth control benefit in Obamacare because, I don't know, Obamacare was passed by a black president or something. So instead, they sued under RFRA, which allows for those kinds of accommodations. But here, the students and workers are taking the fight right to Trump and the evangelicals he's packed in his cabinet. And they're telling them and the courts that they are blatantly favoring the religious right at the expense of the rest of us, plenty of whom also have religious rights, by the way. So instead of seeking an accommodation to an existing law, the ACLU and other lawsuits tell the Trump administration and its efforts to unilaterally change the law with this garbage regulation that it's both unconstitutional and an abuse of his power.
You know, I really like the way that the religious right is basically turning The Handmaid's Tale, which is fiction, into nonfiction. I mean, where's my bonnet? Do you have a bonnet, Jess?
I don't have a bonnet, at least yet.
I feel like we should get bonnets, because pretty soon we're all going to be walking around wearing bonnets like What's-Her-Face from Mad Men.
Frankly, I'd probably be in one of the camps considered inappropriate people.
That's true. We're probably going to be the first rounded up and thrown in a dungeon somewhere, because we're going to be agitating and providing birth control pills like by a van, like a Scooby-Doo van full of birth control pills.
Just going to start throwing them out my window anytime I'm riding outside.
Exactly.
And you get birth control pills, and you get birth control pills.
Look under your seat. There are birth control pills. So next up, we have our listener question. Rogue Goat, which is really an awesome Twitter name, reached out and asked us what the hell is going on with those Satanists in Missouri and their legal challenges based on religious objections to abortion restrictions in the state of Missouri.
Okay, I love this lawsuit. Here's a little bit of background. Missouri has a 72-hour waiting period to get an abortion, and it's one of the nation's longest and most restrictive. But now, the Missouri Supreme Court is going to decide whether the claims of members of the Satanic Temple who are challenging the law on religious grounds get to move forward. So, who are the Satanic members and what are their religious beliefs? Well, they're claiming that one's body is inviolable, subject to one's own will alone. That is, i.e., we have a fundamental right to privacy that no government can sort of step within. Two, beliefs should conform to our best scientific understanding of the world. In other words, the 72-hour waiting period is bullshit and based on junk science. And we should take care never to, quote, distort scientific facts to fit our beliefs, end quote. See, these 72-hour waiting periods are based on scientific bullshit.
I think it's really hilarious that I've been actually perusing the Satanic Temple members' website to figure out what their position on abortion rights is. Like, I never in a million years thought that that would be part of my job.
Honestly, seriously. But there are some real things that are amazing about this lawsuit. One, it shows that religious objections are not reserved for the evangelical right. What we see is the religious right now trying to use the law as both a sword and a shield, right? I mean, they're trying to use it as a sword to attack the rights of women and LGBTQ people, and they're trying to use it as a shield to avoid complying with the law. Also, it shows abortion patients have religious beliefs too, and the state shouldn't interfere with those healthcare and those beliefs.
So basically, you're saying that the Satanic Temple members might actually have a legal argument, like a solid, cogent legal argument.
Well, they certainly do. And it's also a test to see what kind of religions the law is going to protect.
It's going to be interesting to see that if they have to protect Satanists. It's going to be interesting to see if they are willing to protect Islam. It's going to be interesting to see if they're willing to protect anything other than evangelical Christianity.
Certainly is.
Good times for everyone. Good times to worship the devil? No, don't worship the devil. Or do, I don't care. It's your life. I don't know where that came from. I have to go grab my iPad real quick because that's where my podcast app is for the listener review. So hang on one second. Okay, so now's the part of the show where we read our 5-star listener reviews. This is a fun part of the show because we love hearing from our listeners.
And they leave really good reviews.
They do leave. And they also have really good screen names. For example, College Dude 52896 says, Imani and Jessica cut right to the core and bring listeners with them. Thanks for making these cases digestible and engaging for non-lawyers. You are welcome, College Student 52896. That's what we hope to do. That's what we're aiming to do here.
We're like a shank to the law. I love it.
Shank to the law. I'm going to shank them. Shiv them. This one from Kate Monster 1024. Team Legal rocks, it says. 10 out of 10. Would give beer and listen to diatribes about how terrible Neil Gorsuch is from Jess and Imani if they showed up at my house unannounced. 14 out of 10. Would like Jess to karaoke her SCOTUS updates in her Captain Abortion costume. Something to think about. Love it. Thank you, Kate Monster.
Oh my God, that's amazing. We'll always take beer to rant about Neil Gorsuch. And yes, I mean,
absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
I have thoughts on doing karaoke and Captain Abortion, which is a real costume, by the way, but that's also a different conversation.
A different conversation for a different period of time. Next up, we have Christine Marie Parker. The title of this is, Can I be Imani and Jessica when I grow up? And then the subject is, aww, #K thanks, bye. Thank you, Christine. I don't think you want to be us when you grow up, though, because we're kind of loony. The next one we have is from Gaiman. The title, Today's Supreme Court Cases Made Clear. Imani and Jess are lawyers who help make sense of the current Supreme Court cases with simple, clear explanations and amusing commentary. It's hard to find news that go as in-depth into cases the way this podcast does, and I find their insights valuable. Thanks for a great podcast. Thank you, Gaiman. Keep gaming or gammon. Is it like gaming or gammon? Maybe your name is Gammon. I don't know. I wish I knew. The next one we have is from Fluorine Did. Okay. Maybe someone is very into fluorine, fluoride. I don't know. Maybe this person is a dentist. Who knows? Accessible and insightful. I love everything about this show. It's the right mix of technical and easy to understand. You leave each episode with a much clearer understanding of the issues. On the off chance that they really do the karaoke, I never meant to cause you any sorrow. I never meant to cause you any pain. I only wanted one time to see you laughing. I only wanted to see you laughing in the purple rain. Purple rain.
Purple rain. Oh, my God. If they are a dentist, I'm sure they're in the 3 of 4 that think this podcast is good for their gums.
And it's absolutely right.
Oh my God, who knew the karaoke joke would get so much traction?
I think at some point you're going to be required to do this karaoke in that Captain Abortion outfit. I don't think this is even like something we're going to speculate on. I think it's something we should just plan for.
Maybe we should listener poll into what song. Oh God, what am I doing?
It's gonna get worse and worse, or better and better, depending on your perspective.
Kind of amazing. All right, let's keep up. Let's keep up with the listener.
Okay, the next one is from Jay Come AU. I've been reading. Says brilliant and funny. I've been reading and following Ms. Gandy from back in the day when she was writing on Balloon Juice. Oh, an old fan. So I was really excited to hear she was co-hosting a new show. Turns out this was exactly what I was looking for: two brilliant lawyers talking about the current state of the law and how it affects us in our daily lives. I've been referring so many of my white cis dude friends to get them to shut up and listen, and I'm always both entertained and educated. Keep up the amazing work. Thank you so much.
Seriously, thank you.
And I love the fact that you're trying to get your white cis dude friends to shut up and listen. Because seriously, white cis dude, sometimes you can shut up and listen. It won't hurt.
It's really okay. And I love that we can be a part of that.
Exactly. Moving on to our next comment, we have the last comment. David MCD 831. Awesome and accessible. I enjoy this podcast as it tackles important legal issues in a way that is understandable and not sleep-inducing. My only wish is that it was either on more often or that each episode was an hour. Great and recommended listen. Well, thank you, David. I mean, we're glad that we don't put you to sleep.
Seriously, and hopefully all of this administrative law this episode won't either.
I don't think it will. I think people will walk away understanding a little bit more about administrative law. They'll know what an interim final rule is, and we can rejoice, drink beer, and then brush our teeth.
And dude, substantive due process. I mean, come on. Yeah.
Substantive due process. That's my jam. So that's it for us, y'all. You can find us on Twitter at Angry Black Lady and at Hegemommy. That's Hegemommy. And don't forget at Rewire_news. And please be sure to share your thoughts with us. Pepper us with questions using the hashtag Team Legal. And if you're not on Twitter and you have a question, get a Twitter account and then ask us a question. I mean, we'll comb Facebook, but really, why are you not on Twitter? It's 2017. Get a Twitter account.
Get a Twitter account. And we're much funnier on Twitter than Facebook, let's be honest.
Much, much funnier. Boom Lawyered is created and hosted by Imani Gandhi and Jessica Mason Piclo. The show is produced by Nora Hurley. Our executive producer is Mark Folletti. And Rewire's editor-in-chief is Jody Jacobson.